Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. I'm Jason Powell here with a review of the WWE Raw show that aired on Monday, May 7th, 2012. Before we get into that episode, a little bit of business to do. First of all, if you enjoy .net's All Access Podcast, and I think you would really enjoy all of the audio that we supply .net members on a weekly basis, hours and hours of new audio content each week, including, this Raw show. This one is an all-access version, but generally what happens is each and every week the members get an audio review of the WWE Raw show, and it's usually recorded late Monday night after the show so that you have access to it if you stay up late, or if you want to know that it's there first thing Tuesday morning so you can check it out on your way to work or maybe kill some time early at work. And, of course, all the major pay-per-views are covered in audio form as well, both WWE and TNA. And all the major television shows, not just Raw. And we have recent interviews with former WWE creative team members Chris DeJoseph, a.k.a. Big Dick Johnson, and Chris Roach. Chris Shore interviewed Eddie Edwards, the former Ring of Honor champion. I interviewed Dragon Gate USA's Gabe Sapolsky and Larry Dallas. Other recent interviews include Bobby Lashley, Sean Daivari, Just Incredible, Shane Hurricane Helms, and many more. So if you are interested in signing up for membership to the ad-free version of ProWrestling.net, it's very simple to do. Head on over to ProWrestling.net as you normally would, and on the right side of your screen, you can't miss the sign-up area. If you just want to try it out for a month, see if you like it, hell, listen to all the audio during that month if you want to. It's good luck trying to do that. But if you want to listen to all the interviews in a month, maybe you can get through a lot of them if you have nothing else to do during that one-month time. It's $7.50 for 1 month. However, if you want to commit, maybe you try it out for a month, maybe you just dive in head first, whatever suits you, whatever works for you, you can get a hell of a price break, $5.50 a month it works out to, if you want to take the annual option that we have available. Again, head on over to ProWrestling.net and take advantage of our membership options. Also, this afternoon, pretty much each and every Tuesday, I will be joining Wade Keller of PWTorch.com on the PW Torch Livecast that is available for free. It's a one-hour free audio show at blogtalkradio.com, 4:30 Central, 5:30 Eastern, and your telephone calls are welcome during the show. We stick around. There's a lot of times we have so many calls we can't get to them during the full or during the one-hour show, so we'll do a little overtime. And then there's also a bonus show that sometimes runs anywhere from, well, it could be 20 minutes, it could be an hour and a half. It just depends on what's going on that day and how much Wade Keller and I feel like we need to chat about things. And those are available exclusively to our members. So you can listen to the full one-hour show for free over at blogtalkradio.com, 4:30 Central, 5:30 Eastern. Each and every Tuesday I'm on with Wade, and if you miss that, just check the .net site about 4 Central, 5 Eastern, and I always have an ad that I run for that show, so with easy access to that day's audio show. All right, having gotten through all of that, let's get into Monday's WWE Raw show, the return of Paul Heyman. Big news, obviously. Paul Heyman, it's been a while, 5-6 years since he's been on television for WWE. His name creeps into the news once in a while, especially when he was negotiating with TNA to be their booker. For those not familiar with Paul Heyman, and by the sounds of that audience last night, there's a lot of younger fans who are not. Now, I think if you're listening to a pro wrestling audio show, there's a pretty good chance, no matter what your age are, that you have some familiarity with Paul Heyman. But obviously, a longtime manager, Booker and eventual owner of the original ECW, former WWE creative team member. I think he was a part of WCW's, one of their various booking committees as well. Heyman has done it all in the industry. Of course, longtime friend of Brock Lesnar, co-wrote the autobiography that Lesnar produced and accompanied Brock to most of his major UFC fights, and this is something I've been hoping WWE would get to, because even though the crowd last night didn't seem familiar with Paul Heyman, and there was a large, a loud, bass-filled cheer when Paul Heyman came out, but it was a small percentage of the audience. That tells me it's like the adult males were really excited to see him, the women, the kids, the newer fans, kind of like who. That doesn't matter because Paul Heyman is good enough. I mean, in a perfect world, everybody know who he is and go, oh my God, Paul Heyman's here. And it would have been a huge moment for all wrestling fans. But let's face it. I mean, Paul Heyman is good enough on the mic, as he showed last night, that he's going to be able to get heat. And, you know, he's going to do just fine in this role. So even though, that fan base didn't seem familiar with him, I do think that Paul Heyman is going to be a big asset for WWE, particularly when it comes to what he's doing with Brock Lesnar. Mike Johnson over at PWInsider.com is reporting that Heyman is only in through SummerSlam. We'll see if, you know, I mean, no reason to doubt that, just saying, you know, things can change. But if that's the plan now, you know, sometime in August, it sounds like, hey, it's better than nothing, but I would have Paul Heyman around for Brock Lesnar's entire run. A couple of things that Heyman can do for WWE in this role. Limit Brock Lesnar's acting. Brock Lesnar's best work, in my opinion, was when he was shown in that sit-down interview, you know, format backstage, the UFC countdown style approach that WWE took, where they just basically use sound bites, they show him, and I mean, that's Brock at his best. We've seen him do it in UFC. He can cut good wrestling promos, but I would limit those, because I think Brock is the type that he looks menacing. All he has to do is stand there, look pissed, and let somebody else do the talking, and I think it's going to work just fine. Save his promos for, you know, save his speaking for when it really matters, when you really need to make a point. Don't ask him to do too much acting. And I've said from the beginning on this, where they were really going to miss Heyman was WWE likes to do those verbal back and forths. We saw it especially with Rock and John Cena. But you see it on, you know, with a lot of different wrestlers, especially top guys, they like to do those verbal exchanges. That doesn't seem like it's something Brock Lesnar would be very good at. Paul Heyman, on the other hand, can go back and forth with just about with anybody. And so I think that is a really good role. And also, this may be where WWE, you know, actually two more points on this. As far as Lesnar, we know, is under a limited number of dates. And it averages out to about two a month. Now they can, you know, they've already exceeded that, which is why I think you're not seeing Lesnar on television at this point. So Heyman can fill in the gaps. You know, if Lesnar's not there, but they really want to forward his storyline and not use a date, bring in Paul Heyman. And then also, behind the scenes, you know, we still don't know exactly what went down at Extreme Rules. As far as Brock and some people saying a meltdown, other people saying, not quite a meltdown. But, yeah, he was upset regarding something that happened, in the main event with John Cena. And others saying, you know, and in fact, you know, even some of those people who say, not exactly a meltdown. People are saying that WWE is trying to put out a lot of misinformation too. So hard to know what exactly it was, but if there are issues. Now, I know Paul Heyman has obviously the well-earned reputation for being, I don't want to say a political nightmare because he's not, but CM Punk considers himself a Heyman guy. You know, the term drink the Kool-Aid applies to Paul Heyman more than anybody else in pro wrestling. But if Heyman, you know, he's obviously going to be most concerned with Brock Lesnar. He's going to take Lesnar's side of things more so than WWE side of things. But I do think Heyman can be a voice of reason if there are issues with Lesnar. I think he's going to side with Brock time and time again. But if Brock is just being irrational, which it's Lesnar, it's possible, and then Heyman knows it, I think Heyman has a good enough rapport with Brock Lesnar that he might be able to get him to mellow out a little bit and maybe see the light on some things. So I'm surprised this didn't happen from the start. I was hopeful that, hey, if they're, you know, maybe they're just saving it for when Brock gets around to facing CM Punk, which I really hope happens because of that whole CM Punk, I'm a Paul Heyman guy line, which they can play off of. And, you know, maybe they still get to that. But so I think a really good move by WWE to bring him in this capacity. He is labeled as Brock's legal advisor. And, you know, we'll see going forward just how much Paul Heyman is on WWE television. I don't know if he's going to be a weekly player while he's there, if he has a limited number of dates like Lesnar does. I don't expect Heyman to do much behind the scenes in terms of working in creative or anything like that. He really butted heads with Stephanie McMahon especially. And I think that I just don't know that Paul Heyman wants that at this point. I don't think he wants to be part of a team. I don't think he wants the day in and day out grind of working for WWE Creative. He's at a different point in his life. He has two children, and you know I'm guessing 5 and 7. That's a total guess, but you know, around that age, and he has a little boy and a little girl, and I just don't think he wants to make that type of commitment to WWE. As, you know, TNA was a little bit different because that was, he wanted total control, and that's why it didn't work out. You know, he wanted total control of that company, wanted in terms of creatively, in terms of making the decisions to hire and fire. And yeah, it would have taken a lot of work from Heyman and whatnot, and taken him away from his family. But I think it's a trade-off he was willing to make. I don't think just, hey, welcome back to WWE Creative. I don't think that's something he'd be interested in doing. Will he have some creative input regarding Lesnar? Yeah, one way or another, I think he will. I mean, he might even say publicly, nope, just going along for the ride. But, you know, I think Lesnar's going to want that out of Paul Heyman. I really do. I think, you know, even if Paul's not going right to WWE management and, you know, here's my idea. I certainly think that whether it's through Lesnar, you know, somehow, some way, that is going to happen. Now, as for the actual show, and I should apologize if you happen to hear some panting in the background. I have two dogs. One of them couldn't care less about thunderstorms. I'm convinced, God forbid, a tornado could rip through the area and the dog would be like, yeah, whatever. The other one, as soon as the skies get gray and there's any even like minor thunder or any kind of rain, pant, pant, pant. And that was really fun on Saturday night when I was up until about 5 o'clock in the morning because the dog wouldn't stop panting. And yeah, I know you can give her, my vet recommended giving her, what is it? What do you take for allergies? Benadryl. Like a half tablet of Benadryl to calm the nerves. The problem is, if you don't know that it's going to storm, once it starts storming, that dog won't eat anything. She loves bone. She loves cheese. But once it starts, forget it. Not happening. And we're at that point. I think it's going to pass through. But anyway, just wanted to give you a heads up. No, there's not somebody, you know, stalking me, heavy breathing while I'm recording or anything. Well, my dog is kind of stalking me, but hopefully she'll get through this. Now, the show itself was, I mean, you saw so much of the show is about putting heat on John Laurinaitis. And, you know, you can question, is this a good move by WWE? Is this a bad move to have him in that main event of Over the Limit? And I do believe it's actually going to be the main event, or at least it's slotted to, based on what CM Punk had to say about after his match, he's going to go check out John Cena, kicking the crap out of John Laurinaitis, essentially. And that told me, yeah, they're really going for it. They're going to have that on in the final segment. Maybe there's an angle that justifies it. I don't know. Maybe they'll change their minds. But the you know point is, you can debate whether or not you think it's a good move by WWE, but since they've decided to do this, of course you're going to spend time putting heat on John Laurinaitis. And they did a pretty good job of it. I can't say that I'm any more excited about the match or looking forward to it any more than or less than I was last week. But, you know, I mean, it was a logical approach by WWE. So we'll kind of work our way through the show. I'm going to skim over things more so than usual. I'm not going to read a ton of stuff. We got Lesnar, I'm sorry, Laurinaitis opening the show and just cutting his heel promo. And saying that no one, including John Cena, is going to question his authority. And, of course, I immediately had a flashback to Eric Cartman's Respect My Authority. Laurinaitis said that he will continue where Brock Lesnar stopped with Cena. And played a video at one point to show just how dangerous he is. Or not even a video. It was like just photos of his career in Japan and whatnot. And he said that he told John Cena to just take the week off and get physical therapy for his arm because he doesn't want there to be any excuses. But he said Cena was going to appear live via satellite in an interview with Michael Cole, another exclusive Michael Cole interview, by the way, because, yeah, Michael Cole's big on exclusive. I guess it makes sense for his character to boast that they're exclusive. But another big thing that Laurinaitis said is that he doesn't want anyone making fun of his voice anymore. And he told the story about taking a clothesline from Steve Dr. Death Williams and how his voice changed. I can tell you, maybe this is common knowledge, and I just, you know, with people who follow Japanese wrestling and the career of John Laurinaitis, but now I can't I assume he's shooting straight on Doc. I don't see any reason to think that Laurinaitis is fibbing on this one. But Animal, so Road Warrior Animal, I do a radio show with him from time to time. And he was his version of the story is that 1 week Johnny sounded fine. And, of course, John Laurinaitis is his younger brother. And then the next time he talked to him, he sounded like he does now. And he was Animal even does a mean Johnny impersonation talking about how he took a clothesline and his voice isn't the same anymore. That was that. So anyway, yeah, you're not allowed to make fun of John Laurinaitis' voice or question his authority was basically the issue here. CM Punk came out, and that's where he was talking about how he is looking for, you know, he wants to watch Cena destroy Laurinaitis, essentially, and just tearing him down, saying he had to compete in Japan because there wasn't a person in the U.S. who would pay to see him. His rotten-ass wrestle, he said. Called him a joke, and then Laurinaitis eventually booked CM Punk in a match with Lord Tensai for later in the show. Punk was good here, especially right where that point. Punk didn't just kind of smirk and, yeah, whatever, Tensai. Kept a serious face. Like, yeah, just by keeping a serious face, it showed, you know, he didn't sit there and, do the bug eyes or show fear or anything. But by keeping that serious face, it was like, okay, Punk is taking this guy seriously. And so that was the opening segment of Raw. And again, it was all about putting heat on John Laurinaitis, as so much of this show was. And then we got a shot of Big Show walking backstage, and after a commercial break, Laurinaitis and Big Show bumped into one another. Johnny was texting, and of course he started yelling at Big Show, asking if he was stupid, and Big Show dared to mock Johnny's voice. They went in separate directions, but Eve was shown watching the exchange in her new Miss Hancock gear. It's like one part Miss Hancock, a.k.a. Stacy Keibler from WCW, and I guess the newer version, for those of you who weren't around then, would be Miss Tessmacher, before she became a wrestler for TNA. Opening match was Big Show beating Cody Rhodes via countout in 155. Cody just grabbed the title and left. Big Show tried to stop him at one point. And I mentioned this in my live coverage last night. Whatever happened to the babyface just grabbing the referee and saying, oh, no, you don't. You're not counting this guy out. They don't do that anymore. Very, at least in WWE. Once that heel takes off, the babyface either chases him, which, I can at least understand it's Big Show. He's not going to catch Cody Rhodes. But whatever happened to just stopping the Kong and get this guy back here. But all this was kind of Big Show got his return match, I guess. And, maybe they'll do more, maybe they won't. But this was a setup basically for Eve to come out and tear into Big Show and insist that he apologize. She even pointed out that there's not much of a need for a 7-foot-tall, 440-pound freak outside the WWE. And so that's when she pointed that out, then she got her apology. You know, my first reaction was, God, they made Big Show look like a wuss. This guy's been with WWE how many years? He doesn't have enough FU money to say, screw you, lady, and leave. But, it's all about putting heat on Eve and Laurinaitis. And I could make that complaint, but let's face it, I don't think it's going to make, the next time they decide to do something with Big Show, I don't think fans are even going to, look back and go, oh, he's that wuss that didn't stand up to Eve. So, I'm going to pick my spots on this one. I don't think it was that big of a deal. He just outright apologized for making fun of John Laurinaitis' voice. He said it in a strained way. He wasn't happy about saying it. He got that over him. Eve is doing a hell of a job. I mean, I used to openly mock the idea of doing anything, pairing Eve with anyone, because there was a track record of her adding nothing to acts. See Crime Time. See R-Truth when she was doing the bad one-woman dance team moves or whatever the hell you want to call them. But since she turned heel and they put her in this role, she's really shining. She's really doing a good job. In fact, I would say, of actual divas, not counting Vicky Guerrero, who doesn't wrestle, in a serious manner, Eve's got more heat than anybody has in that division in a long, long time. Granted, she's not exactly wrestling all that much either right now, but it's nice to see. Then we got the second match of the night, which was Kofi Kingston losing to Dolph Ziggler in 2:15. I'm like, when it happened, I was almost kind of like, I shouldn't feel like this was a bad move because I'm the guy who constantly endorses, and not the only one, obviously, who endorses the idea of doing more with Dolph Ziggler and giving him a push. But it was, you know, the way it happened, it just was like, all right, they're not doing anything with Dolph here other than probably setting up him and Jack Swagger for a tag title match with the new champions. They didn't officially add that to the pay-per-view. Might even be a Raw match for all we know. But I think that's all this was here. And the reason I kind of was, like, shaking my head a little bit, they just won the tag titles. I thought maybe they'd actually, you know, try to build some momentum for them. But Kofi continues to be that guy who can win tag matches. And if he's on television otherwise, he can't win a singles match. So the finish essentially was that Swagger tripped Kofi while Vicky was distracting the referee, and then Dolph hit his finisher. 2:15 was all we got from those two. I'd love to watch Dolph Ziggler and Kofi Kingston get about 12 minutes and 15 seconds of ring time because I think they can really tear it up. They did show AW watching backstage with his team of Primo, Epico, and Rosa. He is representing them now. And I don't recall if it was here or if it was later in the show. I think it was at this point. Mason Ryan walked into the picture, too. So it looks like Mason Ryan is going to be joining this new stable that AW is putting together. I'm all for the return of pro wrestling managers. Whatever WWE wants to call them, if they've got some new term to avoid using the wrestling slang that Vince McMahon hates so much, fine. They're managers. We just, don't tell Vince that. Great idea. There's a lot of guys who need mouthpieces in WWE, and AW can talk, and I hope he's not the only one. I hope we get more managers to come because I think it's long overdue, and hell, might even open the door for some managers in TNA because it seems like if WWE is doing something, TNA eventually will get around to it too. And, they were doing, they had more managers than, even when WWE didn't. But, that kind of stopped. Not that they had a lot, but, certainly Jim Mitchell did what he could for the Abyss character. By the way, WWE, if you're looking for managers, I strongly recommend the Sinister Minister. I don't know if I'd use him as Sinister Minister in the WWE kid-friendly environment. Maybe I've been talked about for years, but maybe something with him and Kane. But Jim Mitchell can talk. Big man. I can't believe that guy is not employed by one of the big two wrestling companies, because he's such a damn good talker. Backstage, John Cena was shown prepping for his interview. He had his arm in a sling. And after a commercial break, we got... let me back up. AW on Twitter, I don't know if they acknowledge this on television. I tend to zone out the announcers unintentionally sometimes. Sometimes intentionally, too. But he said that he will not exercise his team rematch clause until the precise right moment. So he covered that on Twitter, even if they didn't last night. And then we got a graphic from WWE touting that they beat every NBA playoff game broadcast on TNT in the ratings. You go, WWE. Michael Cole stood in the ring and interviewed John Cena, who was only shown on the big screen via satellite, in case you're wondering. Yes, John Cena was at the show. He worked the Dark Main Event. Our correspondent didn't mention how they addressed it. I don't know if he just, made some claim that he just got to the building or how they covered that. But he did work the Dark Main Event. So he was there. I don't think anyone's too surprised by that. Well, I guess it could go either way. Maybe you thought, maybe Cena's got something going on. But, he was at the building. So, this was just kind of Cole being, kind of heel with some of his questions. And the one interesting thing that they covered storyline-wise was that, Cena noted that he actually was contacted by the WWE Board of Directors and basically told them to forget anger management courses and don't fire Laurinaitis until after Over the Limit. So does that mean Big Johnny gets the boot after Over the Limit? I don't even know. I was kind of wondering, are we going to find out, this board of directors is a bunch of heels? They'll show the board, and it's, all the evil villains from WWE's past, Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man, is doing his big laugh, and he's just, surrounded by all the great villains from the past? Yeah, probably not, but especially when they made sure to point out that Cena had been contacted. Cole said that he's been so impressed by Laurinaitis' work in Japan that he questions whether Cena is afraid of him. And Cena laughed and then got fired up, and he said that in 13 days he will kick John Laurinaitis' ass. He didn't say it like Abyss would. Abyss would have said, ass. He just said he's going to kick his ass. And then his music played to conclude the interview. It was okay. And, I mean, Cena was showing good passion. You know, I like that Cena more. The Preacher Man stuff, after a while, you kind of roll your eyes at it. But it beats the hell out of smirking John Cena. Doesn't put anything over. Doesn't show, like, any intensity going into these big matches. It's just kind of like, hey, it's another week in John Cena's life. Doesn't matter who he's facing. It's going to be the same approach. This is so much better. And but the problem was that was a really pro John Cena crowd. I exchanged a text with Bruce Mitchell from over at the Torch and asked him about the live crowd's reaction to some things, because it really was flat. And he just said, you know, it's a pro Cena crowd. There wasn't the Cena sucks chance, and they were deflated that, you know, because they thought he wasn't there. And makes sense. So then I'm sure they went, you know, crazy when he came out later on in the show. But I think it did hurt WWE a little bit as far as the crowd reaction goes. And I'm also wondering, just going to hurt them in the ratings. Now, last week, Brock Lesnar was sent packing early in the show. And I still question, you know, did people really tune out just because of that when there's also NBA playoff games? And, yeah, WWE's doing better ratings in those playoff games. But doesn't mean, you know, they're not losing some viewers to those games. And, yeah, I mean, there's just other things going on, other factors that kind of make me wonder, was it all because Brock? And another big one is that, well, when WWE tells you someone's been thrown out of the building, a lot of times you just assume they're coming back at the end of the night. Hell, I was waiting for it until the very end of the show. I kept waiting for Lesnar to come back. So, but you know, if all of a sudden today again we see that the you know, when the ratings come out, I assume it'll be this afternoon, that the first hour did much better than the second hour, or, you know, ideally we'd get quarter hour breakdowns that would show, all right, did things really drop after the third quarter hour, or, you know, or the first quarter hour, even when they said that Cena wasn't actually going to be there in person? But we still got those NBA playoffs. I assume there were games last night. I'm not a big NBA fan, so I'm not really keeping tabs on it, but I'm a hockey guy, which, you know, does factor in a little bit to the ratings, but well, last night it would, because the big New York team was playing. The Rangers were playing against the Capitals, so, you know, it's not going to be as big as the NBA rating, I don't believe. I haven't kept close tabs on the NHL ratings either, but I'll look into it. We got after a break, we got Kelly and Layla beating Maxine and Natalya in 1 minute. They mentioned WWE NXT. You know, what Vince McMahon called the next evolution in television. Yeah, that show that was good for, like, well, as long as the Daniel Bryan and Chris Jericho match lasted on the premiere episode, and then just kept going downhill. And now is only on the WWE website. And they had a never-ending competition, a never-ending season. And apparently it kind of ended, but they didn't bother to crown a winner. I'm not kidding. That season went forever until it was down to two guys. And then instead of just, like, naming a champion, this went on for, like, months, like close to a year, if not a year. But, yeah, they just said, well, both guys have been called up to SmackDown. And it's still going. I mean, they're putting a little more effort into it. It looks like it's more storyline driven now in recent weeks than it had been. But, yeah, Cole said Maxine is a regular on WWE NXT. And, of course, Layla pinned Maxine after hitting her finisher a couple seconds later. Beth Phoenix was on commentary. She would not address her ankle injury. They did tell us that Beth will challenge Layla at the pay-per-view for the Divas Championship. Because she wouldn't address the ankle injury, it kind of leaves the door open for the possibility that she's going to be, won't be medically cleared to wrestle and will be pulled from that match, which would open the door for karma, conceivably. We thought that last time, too. You know, nothing set in stone there. I mean, for all we know, they're just going to go through with this match, or they'll give us some return of some diva that people are kind of, yawning at, like they did poor Layla. And I say poor Layla because she went through all that rehab and then came back and was put in the role that everyone assumed Karma was going to be in at that pay-per-view. And people were like, really? Yeah, whatever. Then we got some hype for Santino Marella's YouTube show and ring introductions for Ricardo Rodriguez, who was so excited about Raw that he was caught doing 70 miles per hour in a 55. Yes, he was ticketed for speeding. And TMZ thought this was big news. So I was like, well, it's good enough for TMZ. What the hell? It's good enough for .NET. Yeah, this made TMZ that he was, Ricardo was ticketed for speeding. He was in a construction zone. And they were making a big deal out of his whopping $200 fine. $200? Really? That's speeding ticket. What's it, about $100? So it must be double in construction. Yeah, probably $100. And they were acting like, you know, they had a source on this. It included a photo that looked like it was taken from the driver's seat. I'm not kidding you. Who would the shocking source be? I suppose it's possible that someone broke in and stole Ricardo's phone and, in his hotel room, stole the phone and then sent the picture. I think it was Ricardo. And I would, for his sake, I assume, and for his sake, I would hope that WWE gave their blessing. Let's see here. But anyway, this was a tag match. It was Chris Jericho and Alberto Del Rio defeating the team of Sheamus and Randy Orton in 13 minutes. Good match. Pleasantly surprised by the outcome, and I figured it out right away, as you can tell from my live coverage, that it looked to be a setup for a four-way match, and indeed it was, because what happened was Randy Orton accidentally took a kick, a brogue kick from Sheamus. Sheamus intended the kick for one of the heels, and Chris Jericho ended up getting the pin, and then Orton and Sheamus fought afterwards. So Del Rio already had the title shot. Jericho can obviously and did claim that he deserves it because he got the pin, and now there's friction between Orton and Sheamus, so they'd want to get at one another. You know, I think it makes perfect sense to add this, to add a four-way match to the pay-per-view. I think they're going to have a hard time selling people on Cena Laurinaitis, especially after WrestleMania, Extreme Rules, and this pay-per-view occurring, what, not even 2 months after Mania. I mean, what, about 50 days after Mania, approximately? I mean, that's a big investment for WWE fans. If you ordered WrestleMania and then you turn around and ordered Brock versus Cena at Extreme Rules, and then the third one in 50 days, they're asking you to order to see Cena Laurinaitis. And obviously there's other things on the show, and some will, but it's tough. And so I think they really needed to beef up, you know, the one of the top matches. And in this case, the one that needed something, in my opinion, most was Sheamus versus Del Rio. Not that they couldn't have had a good match together. It's just this adds more star power to it by putting Orton and Jericho in that match, especially Orton. I mean, you still, despite the fact that they really haven't done anything of, you know, been major with him lately, still getting great pops. And last night was no exception. I mean, he's still one of the most popular guys in WWE, and I would say probably the most popular guy in the SmackDown brand still. But good match. I really enjoyed that. Then we got Michael Cole. We got John Laurinaitis telling Eve that Big Show's apology was insincere and hollow. And so she said she was going to go talk to him. Chris Jericho, this is when they did the bit where Jericho made his case and Del Rio tried to cut him off saying he has the match already, and then Orton shows up and fights with Sheamus. And so, yeah, it was set up. The official announcement was that they will meet in a four-way at the pay-per-view. And so scrap that Del Rio versus Sheamus match that was advertised. Then we got Brodus Clay and his dancers doing their bit. Miz cuts a promo, made a King Hippo reference from Mike Tyson's Punch-Out that younger viewers probably don't recall, but those of us who obsessed for, man, months trying to beat Mike Tyson, and eventually did, I'm proud to say, took a long time, damn it. Yeah, I mean, it's an older game, but it's a great game. And so even if people don't really get the King Hippo reference, too bad. I did. I enjoyed it. Yes, I'm the center of the universe. You know, this was a much longer match than we're used to seeing from Brodus Clay. He beat Miz in 4:30, and it was longer than it needed to be. I mean, it was just part of, you know, Miz just kept applying chin locks, and the crowd was kind of losing interest in it, and I did. And but, you know, Brodus, as expected, won. He hit a suplex and a big splash for the win. I still think, you know, Brodus isn't showing much in the ring. Maybe that's why WWE went with this gimmick rather than the monster heel gimmick that I really thought, and a lot of us thought, would be the way to go. But, you know, the honeymoon's over as far as Brodus Clay and the whole Funkasaurus dance routine goes. Might be fun if it comes to your town for a live event. But when you see, I mean, I really thought, like, the Raw could be cut for that reason. Like, you know, it's fun when it comes to your town. people would keep it alive on Raw, just the people going to the shows longer than they did. Like, you know, they might not be, they might be as bored as everybody else with it watching it on television. But hey, when it comes to your town, it's fun. You get up, you get into it. That's not happening very often anymore. People kind of seem bored with the whole Brodus Clay dance number. Some towns are better than others. Then we got a Be a Star video. Mark Henry was bullied as a child, you'll be happy to know. Alberto Del Rio is also shown in the video. I don't know if you guys know this. Mark Henry and Alberto Del Rio are heels. You know, you want to have them go out and talk to kids? Great. Really don't have any. I mean, good for them. Isn't there other guys you could show, you know, more babyface-friendly guys on the actual television show? I can't say I get that. Then we got a graphic. They're boasting about their social networking. I didn't care. Then it was time for the Brock Lesnar and Triple H recap segment from the week before. And at first I'm like, man, this is pretty late to be showing this. I thought this would have been something early. And that's like, well, then again, if Brock's not at the pay-per-view and Triple H isn't at the pay-per-view, I know you got to keep it alive. And they did in a big way, it turned out. But, you know, maybe you don't put that immediate focus on it. You don't make it seem bigger than the pay-per-view. And I think they pulled a, you know, it's a tough balancing act, and I'm okay with what they did. Obviously, this is where they announced that Lesnar had sent a legal representative instead. In fact, John Laurinaitis, I think it was earlier, had said, or somebody had said that Lesnar had been invited to the show. They said, actually it was the announcers, they said Triple H would be there next week, and Lesnar declined an invitation, but he had sent a legal representative instead. CM Punk actually, for some reason, posted a photo of Paul Heyman online before he went out there. I don't know why. But Lesnar's music played and played and played. And then finally, Paul Heyman walked out. Like I said, he got that, you know, he got the pop from the adult male portion of the crowd that remembered him. And otherwise, it was, you know, a lot of either lack of excitement, like they remembered him and didn't care, or just didn't know who he was. Kind of odd, but really good promo from Paul Heyman, as you would expect. Just reading a statement from Brock Lesnar, talking, you know, I'm not going to read through it all. You can check my report for it. But, you know, just talking, a couple of little things to note from this. He said that he doesn't regret what he did to Triple H. He embarrassed him, John Cena. He embarrassed him, and he said another guy I embarrassed was Triple H. He's always been jealous of me. Triple H lasted nearly 1 hour in a Hell in a Cell with Undertaker, but he couldn't last 1 minute in a fight with me. I like that they're tying them together. You know, I think it's obvious, it's natural to assume, well, Brock beats Taker. If Brock beats Hunter, I wonder if they're setting up Brock versus Taker. And, you know, you can go, well, geez, WrestleMania is so far away. The match doesn't have to take place at WrestleMania. The first one, you can have Brock and Taker at Survivor Series. You know, just because Taker's been working one match a year doesn't mean it's going to necessarily stay that way. You know, so keep that in mind. Maybe this is a setup. You know, Brock beats Hunter, presumably at SummerSlam, and just mauls him, and then it's like Taker comes back to save the day, but he doesn't. Lesnar beats him, and then, you know, maybe they split off, do their own thing, but eventually, you know, maybe they put over Lesnar so strong in that match with Taker that just to make it seem like, man, the streak's in jeopardy. And, of course, Undertaker keeps the streak alive somehow, some way would be my assumption. But, again, really good promo from Heyman. And, you know, I guess I said what I needed to, I think, earlier in the show or in this audio show about why I think he's going to be a valuable asset to WWE as far as the Brock Lesnar push is concerned. Then we got Cole saying he assumed Lesnar would have been fired had he shown up on Raw. And then they quickly, you know, shifted the focus again back to Laurinaitis and replayed the segment with Laurinaitis and Punk from earlier. And, you know, you had to do that. I mean, I think if Triple H and Lesnar were wrestling at this pay-per-view, you go to a commercial there. You let it sink in. And then you come back and the announcers are buzzing over it, but they're not. You know, Punk and Laurinaitis, Tensai, those guys are at the pay-per-view. Well, I assume Tensai will be there, but, you know, those guys are at the pay-per-view. and Brock and Triple H isn't advertised. It's not going to be part of the pay-per-view. So you keep the story alive, but you really keep the focus on what you're trying to sell for this month. There's still plenty of time to build up Brock versus Triple H. So nicely done. Then we got Jerry Lawler making the saying that CM Punk would face Lord Tensai in a 2-on-1 handicap match next. Like, right there, I'm like, did I miss something? So I probably did, because as I told you guys earlier, I tend to inadvertently zone out the announcers. And, no, I didn't miss something. They screwed up. And for some reason, they went backstage with USA Network actors. They were shown earlier in the crowd. Common Law, I think, is the show. Insert your own joke about my 15-year relationship with my girlfriend, not my wife. No, I don't have a wife, too, for those of you who are really 15-year girlfriend on the side? No, I have a 15-year relationship with a girlfriend. She's not a 15-year-old. This is really taking an odd turn. My girlfriend and I have been together for 15 years, and she is not 15. She's older than that. She's always been older than that since we've known one another. Get your minds out of the gutter, you twisted. Then they were just trying to give Show a pep talk and clowning around. Show was clowning around, and then Eve showed up and saw Show. Eve wasn't happy. Show looked like he was, he got caught by the teacher. And then it was time for CM Punk to make his entrance, and John Laurinaitis walked out, made that announcement that it would be a handicap match with Punk facing Tensai and Daniel Bryan, and they went to commercial break. And I kind of found it funny that Waller screwed up on the same night that the guy who once replaced him as the Raw color commentator showed up. For all we know, this was something fed to the king. I don't know, but I did get somebody screwed up. And if it wasn't, if Vince was feeding him the lines, if it wasn't him, I'm guessing Jerry got an earful last night. Poor king. Main event was Lord Tensai defeating, and Daniel Bryan defeating CM Punk in a handicap match in 6:55. Solid, handicap match. It was good. The crowd likes Punk. I think they wanted to explode for Cena, but they like Punk. And this seemed like it was more about Tensai than it was Daniel Bryan, at least during the match. Punk was beaten up pretty good, and then he made his comeback, and he went to the top rope, and Sakamoto argued with the referee, and then Bryan tripped Punk, who was standing on the top rope, and Tensai slammed Punk, almost like a Punjabi plunge kind of a slam, and it wasn't a very good one. It was kind of awkward. I don't know who was at fault, but then he spit the green mist onto his hand and applied the claw. I'm a big fan of this mist into the hand. I like the old mist in the face, but maybe I can see Vince going, doesn't make sense, damn it, why wouldn't the referee see the green mist? And he probably, has a point. But Tensai slammed Punk down with the claw hold and pinned him. And then Daniel Bryan did the yes, yes, yes bit at ringside. After Tensai left, then Daniel Bryan got in the ring, worked over Punk and applied the yes lock. Yelled yes repeatedly, got a good round of boos from the crowd, and Cole closed out the show by saying that Laurinaitis made the point that there will be serious repercussions for failure to respect his authority. It was all about putting heat on John Laurinaitis. Not as much heat as I would have liked to have seen. Not as much focus, I should say, on Daniel Bryan versus Punk. Hopefully they'll do something on SmackDown. Maybe Punk makes the trip to the Tuesday night show. I don't know. But there's only 1 week left to hype that match. And, as an online fan, every online fan, I think we're supposed to really look forward to this match, and I am, because I know it's going to be good. I'm looking forward to the match, but the hype has left something to be desired, and there's only 1 week to go. I was hoping for a little more hype. As far as Tensai goes, he's now pinned the WWE champion, and he's also pinned the most popular babyface in the company, and I don't see any more crowd reaction for him than we did before he did those things. Now, hey, you just pinned the WWE champion. Maybe something will change next week, and he'll be the most booed heel in the company. Yeah, I don't think so either. But the point is, it's they're really trying hard with this gimmick, and I haven't ruled out that they're going to have some success with it, but I don't think it's as big as they envisioned it being. I don't think they're getting the reaction to it just yet. I like I really like the Sakamoto sidekick when he and Tensai surrounded Cena last week. If they can get, I think you're going to need a little more Sakamoto cheating and you know, flying around and doing some things to help that act, because Tensai, is it just me or is he getting fatter? I could be wrong on that, but it's just not clicking quite yet. But I guess give him credit for determination, but you have to wonder, boy, if they gave somebody like, now it's not the same style, but if you gave a Dolph Ziggler or somebody else this much love and attention and wins, I think just about, you know, a lot of people would be a lot more over than Tensai is right now had they been given wins over John Cena and CM Punk. But, yeah, I had a bigger issue. I mean, I'm not ruling out that Tensai can still, you know, be considered an acceptable top-level heel. Not the top heel, but a top-level guy in WWE. Plug in the main events on the house shows and whatnot. But I wanted more focus on Punk and Daniel Bryan. And instead, they put all the focus on Punk and Laurinaitis, and then Tensai beating him. And we got a little bit of Daniel Bryan beating up Punk at the end of the show. Wasn't enough for my taste. Overall, I mean, newsworthy show with Paul Heyman returning, and you know, obviously the strategy was to build up Laurinaitis, and it wasn't my favorite Raw episode, just kind of there, but I understand what they were trying to do, obviously, with John Laurinaitis, and so, you know, an acceptable addition to Raw, just not a very, not a great one. And you take out the Paul Heyman segment, and not a very newsworthy show either. You know, that was the big part. I think they accomplished what they needed to in terms of putting heat on Big Johnny, but not what they needed to in terms of building up Daniel Bryan heading into this. Right now there's just no reason to think that Daniel Bryan is going to take the championship from CM Punk, and I think that's something they really need to work on between now and the pay-per-view, hopefully starting tonight at SmackDown. No matches advertised for SmackDown that I saw, so that's odd. Next week, Triple H returns on Raw. We'll get his comments, and it's kind of going to be kind of interesting to see how they do this, because Lesnar's the one threatening a lawsuit via Paul Heyman. You know, Heyman saying he's owed millions of dollars in his backstage clip with the WWE website. I don't know if how you get. I mean, I assume normally you would just. They're gonna suspend Lesnar forever, or you know, just ban him for life. And Triple H steps in and says, no, just like Cena did with Laurinaitis. Give him to me. I'll issue the punishment at SummerSlam. But you still have that lawsuit threat. So if they go, hey, Brock gets everything he wants if he beats Hunter, does that mean Hunter wins? I mean, I don't think they're gonna do that in terms of Hunter going over. But I mean, I guess maybe I don't think they'll go with the, you know, WWE Raw starring Brock Lesnar every week, but maybe somehow they just portray it as Lesnar did get almost everything he wanted and they forget some of the things like that conveniently. I'm not sure. But, you know, interesting twist with Paul Heyman making a surprise return to everyone other than CM Punk's Twitter followers. That is going to do it for me, at least for now. Don't forget, check out the PW Torch livecast, 4:30 Central, 5:30 Eastern, over at blogtalkradio.com. Your phone calls welcome. So if you have a question or just want to call in and say, Paul, you're an idiot, I didn't agree with anything you said in your Raw audio, that's fine too. 4:30 Central, 5:30 Eastern. Until then, thank you very much for supporting ProWrestling.net. Thank you to the members out there, especially for their support of the .NET members site. And take advantage of those membership options we have. Ad-free access, hours of new audio content each week, a forum where you can correspond with all those members, and much more. $5.50 if you take that annual option. $7.50 if you just want to try it. Give it a shot. Head on over to ProWrestling.net. Thanks, everybody. Take care.